is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I'll be here for the next hour for the great Malcolm Out Loud, who has given me the honor and the privilege to sit in this chair and talk to all of you. We have a very diverse program this morning with lots of different topics, from the delivery of the impeachment articles to the Senate, to the record-breaking economy, to the Chinese trade deal. We had a little interesting things going on at the Democrat debate recently, and we'll see what we can get to, because it has been a busy week. Like, it's been, I have never seen it as busy as things have been in the news cycle. The news cycle goes on and on and on. So with me today, I want to say I have two great guests, people I love talking to. Mr. Dennis Santiago, an asymmetric warfare expert, a global risk expert, a financial analyst, an author and commentator on global national policy issues. Dennis, good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us is Mr. Jim McKay. Jim is a producer. He's got 30 years of experience in the business. His voice is very important to all of us, and I'm glad Jim is with us this morning. Jim, how are you?
Feeling great. Good morning.
Excellent. So let's take a look immediately. Let's jump right out of the box here and talk about this impeachment, because it's been something so important. This was so devastating that to our country, what Trump has done, he is so dangerous for all of us that they had to ram this through before Christmas. And then Speaker Pelosi sat on it for weeks and weeks and weeks until she finally marched them across the hallway and gave them to the Senate after a lot of pressure. So, Dennis, when you saw that, what do you think caused that, first of all, the holdup? Why did she hold them back, you think? And then what finally broke the dam and she brought them over?
Well, they were holding off on it forever because I really don't think they believed they had a case or a way to argue the case. I think we're probably trying to gauge what was Trump going to do in terms of coming back at them. And, you know, we've since found out that the Trump legal team is like a who's who of high power lawyers showing up on the other side. You know, what I found really interesting was 15 minutes before the House marched their people across the way to introduce them to the Senate. Do you know what the vote was right before that? It was an 89-10 vote in favor of ratifying the USMCA treaty.
Right.
Which is another big win for Trump. And 10 minutes later, you know, Adam Schiff starts his speech.
Unbelievable. And Jim McKay, when you watch this and you see that parade, you know, we watched that parade across the Capitol floor from the House of Representatives over to the Senate. What was your impression of that walk? What did you think of those individuals carrying them over there?
I think it was another step of their circus that they've been running on this whole impeachment effort since Trump was elected. I mean, even Pelosi says, I've been waiting for this for 2.5 years, when they actually voted for the impeachment. The walk across from the House side to the Senate side of the Capitol building, what drama that was. I mean, they're sitting at the table laughing and joking and passing out gold pens as Pelosi is signing this thing before the two articles, before they go march them over with this pomp and circumstance. It's just a show and a sham.
Right. Is anybody buying this? I mean, you're exactly right. You know, they talk about she's very prayerful and what a horrible thing happening to our country. And you gotta say, the impeachment of a president is an extremely serious thing. And here they are, all they've been is giddy now. But you're right, for since the guy has been running for president, they've been talking about, well, we're going to impeach him. We're not going to stand for this. They've been doing that since then. How does this hold any weight with anybody, Dennis?
It doesn't. Basically, you know, they're talking to themselves. They're in an echo chamber. And at this point, they've got, I don't know, I've heard stories about the number of Democrats that are afraid they're going to lose their seats because of this. and the amount of pressure that's being put within their ranks to stay together. They're out of it now. You know, now this is the U.S. Senate that has to deal with this. And there's only 100 people in the country that are going to be voting on this when all is said and done, because they are the jurors for the impeachment trial. Right. And look, I take a big cue from that USMCA vote, man. You know, like the moderate Democrats showed that they are still there, and they voted in favor of the agenda for the country. The Senate has always been known as being much less swayed by current events than the other body. And no, I don't think they buy it. The country certainly doesn't buy it. The media is, you know, unless you are working for one of the organizations whose lifeblood and ability to retain your audience depends on telling them stories every day about this, saying it's soothsaying, I really don't see that anybody really cares.
Yeah, and that's what you're seeming to get, at least in the conservative media, in the conservative circles, you're seeing that this cannot be something that people can be taking seriously. When you see the sham of the investigation that they did, the one-sided, lopsided, inappropriate, illegitimate election investigation that they did, that now, well, here we got it. We finally got it. And when I see that, and this is, Jim, I wanted to ask you about this because I was thinking about this yesterday. When we see who she appointed as the managers, she appointed Schiff and Jerry Nadler. My first thought was, she, who was reluctant to do this, Nancy Pelosi initially was reluctant to even do this. Now that she's been pushed into it, my belief, by her socialist members in her party, that she had to do it or she would lose power. She figures, you know what? These two guys got us here. I'm going to dump it in their lap. And when it goes bad, he's acquitted or we look ridiculous, I can point to them and shove them under the bus. What do you think?
I think that's a good assessment. I mean, Nadler doesn't know what's going on from one minute to the next, and Schiff is so consumed with himself that he has this vicious part of him that's just going after Trump, no matter what the lack of evidence or how it damages the country. He's just a mean-spirited individual. I think we can't use the right word, the words we want to use on the air.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, that's one of the stories that are going on. What I'm looking for, you know, they say the other shoe dropping. I was waiting for it to happen. And as we're getting closer and closer to starting this trial at some point next week, all of a sudden they're going to pull these surprise witnesses, new information, just like they did with Judge Kavanaugh. All of a sudden they start lining up this freak show of people that have all this new information. So as we move along, we're going to have to see what's going on there. But this will be an interesting couple of weeks anyway. So as we move forward, we're looking at, Dennis, you mentioned the new trade pact, which was signed right before the impeachment articles, right? What a major victory that really is for President Trump. And also the other one we have is the China trade pact, right? Phase one was signed. I know you have an article coming up on the platform on America Out Loud pretty soon talking about that.
The two trade pacts that passed this week are the big news for the world. You know,
right.
We have accomplished something. You know, I am giddy with it because this is Make America Great Again. This is the culmination of it as far as the rest of the world is concerned. We just signed a deal with the Chinese to potentially create the largest linked economy the world has ever seen. And basically across the Pacific, everything goes together. The Chinese accepted bringing all of their internal rules on things like intellectual property, technology transfer, finance, access to the financial system to the same standards as the United States. And all we really had to do in our part of the treaty was say, we confirm that we already have the same stuff. And it's a 96-page document with a lot of stuff in it. We are going to increase the trade in agricultural goods with the Chinese. We are looking to ramp up exports from the U.S. to China. That's in one direction by $200 billion in 2 years. This is a lot of stuff. simultaneously, you know, we did exactly the same thing in replacing NAFTA with the USMCA. So we built the same kind of bilateral trade regime that we have with the Chinese in the New World, right? In the northern part of the New World. So essentially everything north of Central America now is on a new footing as well. And here's the important thing of that people really need to understand. These bilateral agreements are set up so that the U.S. and its partner countries negotiate with each other directly. We pick up the phone, we set up hotlines, we talk to each other. It bypasses the arbitration that has held back global commerce that has been stuck in the World Trade Organization for decades. And we just shunted that aside. And so our countries now are far more efficient in what we need to do as far as being able to manage our economies and grow them for the 21st century. Don't think of this as a deal of the day by Donald Trump. Think of this as a path for the United States to figure out what it's going to do for the next 75 years.
That's an amazing statement, 75 years. You're talking changes economically that could be so powerful, like you said, for the world. This is a world agreement. My question to you, Jim McKay, you've been watching this for a long time in your life. You've been watching these deals go back and forth. Do the Chinese actually follow through on what they've signed? Or is this really just, let me do this and play it along for a couple of years just to get rid of these tariffs that Trump put on me, and hopefully there'll be another president that we can bully along? Or do you think they really have smartened up and said, let's make sure our economies are always working? What do you think?
I think that the United States trade is essential to the Chinese, and they know it. We are the world's largest consumer marketplace. The word was, we used to say, when the United States got a cold, the rest of the world got a flu. That's because we account for about 60% of the international trade on a global basis, both import and export. The Chinese are only about 10 to 12% of our total economy. I mean, $500 billion in trade, and we have a $20 trillion economy. So if you do the math, it's pretty small. So if we're not dealing with the Chinese, and their biggest problem today is their food supply. It has always been that problem. And they cannot get any other country in the world to supply them with the soybeans, with rice, with pork. They just had a huge, huge failure in the pork industry, I guess you'd call it. And with a virus or some disease that killed off about 70% of their supply. And that's a large part of their diet. So they put a huge tariff on American pork, and I think at one point they even stopped importing it. So if they can't feed the people, they're in a big problem.
Yeah, they have a billion mouths to feed over there. You know, that's absolutely amazing. We talk about, you know, the size of our country. We're big, 350 million. They have a billion people. Dennis, as you have watched this, and again, I'm going to tell everybody, go to the platform, AmericaOutloud.com, look for that article by Dennis. I'm sure it's filled with information that's going to open your eyes to this situation. But do you think this softens the Chinese? And what I mean by that is, we've seen President Xi has been, you know, he consolidated his power, much more dictatorial, maybe than what we saw, what I thought was starting to develop over there. Do you think this trade pact that he has now worked out, where both sides, looks like there's going to be winners on both sides here, does that soften them a little bit so that this fear of, you know, this imminent conflict, which looks like was building, between the United States, military conflict between the United States and China, has this averted, you think, maybe that potential?
I think it mitigates that potential and makes the possibility of military conflict a little bit more remote going into the future. It's pretty remote as it is. I mean, you know, it's military bluster with saber rattling for power is, you do that because you think you're running out of resources. And, you know, that's the main motivation for going to war in this world. But do you start with taking over Africa, which the Chinese have been doing. And so they've got an agenda there, and it conflicts somewhat with the United States agenda. But, you know, the U.S. has been put on a footing of being much more cooperative with other parts of the world by the Trump administration. It's not as confrontive as it used to be. That's really been one of the White House's big fights with the Department of Defense and the other three-letter agencies that are still trying to live with the Cold War mentality that, you know, China is the big enemy and all that kind of stuff. There's a big faction in Washington that sees that. And, you know, and there we'll hear from voices that are worried about it. But from a point of view of if you're much more linked on an economic basis, it is much harder to contemplate going to war with somebody who, you know, is buying your stuff. Right. And in this case, you know, Xi Jinping has, he's always wanted to make the Chinese economy operate on something that doesn't look like an under the table business. Right, which they have. If you look at the U.S.-China trade deal, it's got pages upon pages about how we, and in particular Chinese, are going to control counterfeiting and forgery and the sale of fake goods. And I mean, the treaty includes things like we're going to take the factories apart when we find them in China. So that's a Chinese law enforcement going and doing this, basically because they understand that you can't operate a global economy at that scale using backroom techniques forever. And it's time to gear shift. That, you know, that's kind of the things that the Chinese are learning that they need to do going forward for the rest of the 21st century. And you do that, and you set up those kinds of codependencies with your biggest trading partner, you're not likely to want to take a shot at them.
Right. I hope for sure that that's the case. When I look at the two different forms of government, I look down the road. I said, the United States, we have a presidential election every 4 years. So the potential of changing leadership, foreign policy, everything that we do is every 4 years. The Chinese have that very long look down the road. You know, you are a leader until you die, basically. So therefore, they can plan past us. You know, this guy can plan for 2028 and Trump won't be here. Who knows what'll be going on then? I always look for the fly in the ointment. You know, what could be the fly in the ointment? So as I look and I'm saying, okay, we got this deal. Hopefully it's going to bring us closer together. We're going to trade. And that's going to, like you said, Dennis, keep them from being more hostile. But Jim McKay, what do you think about Hong Kong? What's going to go on there? Now the people may say there, say, hey, this is our chance to really, really push for our freedom. And does that spoil the broth, so to speak? Is that going to be a problem if they take some heavy-handed action in there to shut that down?
China got their nose bloodied a little bit by the media, showing pictures of the rioters carrying the American flags as they were marching in Hong Kong. Hong Kong, I always called it the New York City where people spoke Chinese. It's an amazing place, about 8 to 10 million people. I really think China realizes now with Trump, they have to take a softer approach because they know that President Trump isn't bluffing. I mean, he started with $100 billion worth of tariffs. We still have, even after the phase one, $300 billion worth of tariffs on their goods. And he is not going to take that away until phase two gets signed. So the Chinese, I think Ping knows that if he uses the softer approach, he's going to be successful. This the military bluster and risking going to war or even just a greater economic conflict. Sure. Is what it will be. I mean,
well, gentlemen, I got to tell you, this the news of the day is something that, you know, 20 minutes from now, the whole world could be changing one way or the other. So I appreciate you being here, Jim McKay and Dennis Santiago. And everybody out there, thank you for being here for Viewpoint this Sunday. We'll be back in a minute. And the information just keeps on rolling.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Viewpoint This Sunday. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we are going to continue with some of the topics a little bit more in depth. We've brought in some additional voices here. We're going to talk a little bit about the Senate versus the House. You know, why are there such differences between the two? We're watching what Nancy Pelosi is doing and how she's handling this impeachment and how she's handling legislation that she refused to deal with, and then how the Senate, how they're reacting to this. What kind of an impeachment trial are we going to have? We're also going to have to look a little deeper at the Republicans versus the Democrats. What's happened to our two parties that they are so far apart? There's no longer really a connection. We're not all rowing in the same direction. Now we're in completely different rivers, and that's something we want to talk about. So we have with us Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst and advisor in intelligence-led counterterrorism solutions. She was trained in Israel, where she lived and worked for 16 years. And also with us is Stu Swerk, who served 30 years in the United States Navy in a variety of active and reserve capacities, with considerable operational experience in the Middle East and Western Pacific. Nice to have you both here. So as you can see, you know, obviously there's a lot going on. This impeachment is right in the middle of some great trade deals that have been signed. Our country seems to be completely at odds with each other, but the poll numbers don't always reveal that. I mean, Trump is at 50%, 51%. He drops down into the 40s. How is it that our country is so divided, really, is the question. And we look at the difference between the Senate and the House. Ilana, you are a great observer of this. What do you see as, how did this huge chasm between Democrats and Republicans and the House and the Senate get going? What's going on here?
Well, I think it goes all the way back to the election of George Bush, when he was competing with the king of global warming. And he, you know, the Democrats refused to accept that election because of the hanging chads in Florida. And that was really, I think, the beginning of this disaffection. But it got much, much worse with the election of Donald Trump, who was an outlier from the beginning, and he beat the odds-on favorite, Hillary Clinton, who did not live up to her poll numbers. So where they thought they would have a landslide for the Democrats, they ended up with a loss. And then they started going after the Constitution and the Electoral College, and then they, from the beginning, went after Donald Trump and promised to impeach him, which they have. The chasm has just gotten worse. The rhetoric is igniting a hatred that I have never seen before in this country.
Well, you know what I think?
And it's a hatred of the left for the right. It does not go back the other way.
It's interesting when you say that, Ilana. The Democrats have been saying that they were going to impeach President Trump since basically the day he announced for president. Clearly since he won the election. But isn't that the only promise that they've made that they've come through with? Weren't they going to make everything better for Americans and get more jobs? And the only promise they've come through with is they said they were going to impeach him, and they have.
Yeah, well, that's the only campaign promise that they have kept from the beginning. They have done virtually no work except under duress. They did finally approve the MCA, which is great, the USMCA, and they have gone ahead and put a kind of an okay on some of Trump's programs that they had to vote on. They were forced to vote on. But virtually nothing has been going on in Congress except preparations for impeachment. And then they carried out a series of of committee hearings that were an affront to democracy. They were totally fraudulent. They were totally biased. And these impeachment hearings were a fraud from beginning to end, and probably what I would call a kangaroo court, because the Democrats were the only ones who were allowed to call witnesses, and the Republicans were limited in their cross-examination and so forth. This whole process from beginning to end has been fraudulent and has been an attack, in my opinion, on our entire democratic process by the Democrats.
I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, I've called it an illegitimate process. Not that the Congress is not empowered to impeach a president. They are. They're specifically empowered to impeach a president.
Sure.
But it's illegitimate in the fact for exactly what you've just mentioned. I think what everyone has seen is that nothing here has been a fair process, which I find that hysterical, you know, that they've done this completely unfair, illegitimate process to impeach him. But now it comes to the trial that's coming up, and they want to demand fairness and openness, and they want to have, you know, make sure that the Republicans do everything right. Stu, when you watch this, with your experience, seeing all of these things go on in the world, where do you see, is this hypocritical that we're seeing here?
Hypocritical. I don't know. Depends on your political point of view, I guess. I want to pile on to what Alana was saying about how we got to where we are. You have to look at the political makeup of Congress, of how it's changed over the last 30 years or so. When I started paying attention to politics in the 1980s, there were such things as conservative Democrats actually serving in Congress and in the Senate. And there was a, you know, there are various different caucuses that people join in both the House and the Senate and so forth. And in the House back in those days, they had a little thing called Progressive Caucus, and it was about a handful of members, maybe four or five or so. Now, though, if you look at the members of the Progressive Caucus in the House of Representatives, there's probably about 70 or 80. In fact, some of the big names that we've been seeing as part of this Democrat impeachment process, these commentators, particularly the ones that are popping up on the cable news programs these days, they're all in that Progressive Caucus. Their Progressive Caucus is the most left-wing, the extreme socialist, if you want to call it, block of the House of Representatives. So not only has the actions in foreign policy and the controversy about a couple of different elections, as Alana pointed out, happened, but the Congress has moved progressively to the left, on the extreme left, on the Democrat side. Now, on the Republican side, you still have rhinos, you still have conservatives, you have a broad spectrum of people in the Republican Party. But the Democrat Party is almost exclusively moved into the left wing. That is the problem here. As far as hypocrisy is concerned, the Democrats, I use a word when I tweet all the time. When I define Democrat, I define it as the Russian word for hypocrisy. That's exactly what they are. I mean, they practice situational ethics on every single topic. And if you compare their comments over time, you will find that they're on all sides of a given topic. Like, for example, this China pact that was recently signed between the Chinese and the U.S., some of those issues that were first pushed were pushed by the likes of Schumer, Pelosi, and the Democrats. But they didn't have a strategy to bring them to fruition, and it took a guy from the outside of the political class by the name of Donald Trump to come in and divine a strategy where he realized that in a communist society, which is a communist dictatorship, you gotta work top down. So he befriended Xi Jinping, and lo and behold, here we have a signed agreement. So once again, on one side, once upon a time, you know, 15, 20 years ago, the Democrats were in favor of doing just exactly what President Trump wanted to do. And now they're caterwauling because they don't like the agreement. They think it's just a throwaway, and it's not good for the American workers. Whatever you know phraseology they can come up with, that's poll testing.
Right.
So yes, they are hypocrites. That's how they live and breathe. They practice situational politics and ethics.
And I think hypocrisy is probably one of the biggest poisons, because it's systemic. When you see, you're exactly right. The things that we're watching Pelosi, Nadler, and all of these Democrats say now, is completely different than what they said when President Clinton was being impeached. It's the exact opposite positions that they're taking. And you see that hypocrisy, it means nothing anymore. I've written an article very recently, should be up on the platform at AmericaOutloud.com, that basically addresses this poison of hypocrisy and how it used to be something that would ruin your political career, ruin your professional career if you were pointed out to be a complete hypocrite. Now it seems, at least on one side of the aisle, that hypocrisy is looked at as, boy, what a great skill you have. You said one thing one time, but this time you said something different, and boy, look how it worked out for you. Alana, have you seen these things, and do you think this intensity between the two parties is really going to cause bigger problems for us, our country as a whole? Is this a danger?
It is a danger, but I think there's another cause, and it is addressable. I'm just not sure how effective addressing it is going to be, and that is the kids who are being taught in school a socialist ideology all over the country. And these kids are growing up, and they are now becoming voters. I can remember 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when I was complaining about the fact that our kids were learning that they didn't have to compete. All they had to do was show up and they would get a prize. And that mentality is now showing itself in their seeming attraction to socialism, where everything is you get free stuff and you don't have to work for it. And this mentality, I think, is what is affecting our lawmakers, because they see it in their constituents. But on the other hand, I think there is a tremendous grassroots movement which is not being taken into account, which recognizes the gift that Donald Trump has been giving to America for the last 3 years. The numbers are just extraordinary. The economy is booming. The salaries are up. The employment is up. Unemployment is down to record levels. And the passage of the USMCA and the China-US deal and the deals with Japan and coming deal with England, and the list goes on. And we're doing it all, and it's all because of him. He's the one who, in spite of the fact that for the last year and a half he's had a Congress which is absolutely opposed to anything he does and really cooperates in the least way they possibly can, he's been attacked since the beginning. He's been under assault, and yet he has gotten more done, I think, than any president in our history.
We see one side has done things that I think most people, if they're honest, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, I have said all along that if President Trump did illegal things, if he committed crimes while in office, then the system is in place to remove him, and that would be the appropriate remedy for someone who committed crimes at that level. We all know, though, the reality is he did not commit any crimes. You can see the evidence in front of you. They've been saying they wanted to come after him since day one. They finally accomplished. They found enough things they could pull together that they felt comfortable voting on to say, we've impeached this president, we've done it, and they've made a mockery out of the system. So I think that intensity between the two, I'm going to agree with you. I think it is dangerous because it takes us to a different place. Impeachment now is just simply another political tool to use if we don't straighten this out, which is taking us kind of down the road to what's going to happen next. Now, we saw Nancy Pelosi and her parade of, let's be kind, let's say her parade of individuals that wanted to march those impeachment articles over to the Senate. They tried to make it into a very pomp and circumstance kind of, look how serious this is. But in the meantime, they're handing out gold pens. They're smiling. They're laughing. We finally got them. We finally got. How is this any dignity? And what does the rest of the world see? Stu, you were talking about, you know, following politics since the 80s and all the changes we have. How does the rest of the world see the Speaker of the House and her and people in her party laughing and giddy with these pens that they got the president over really nothing? If you were common sense, if you're really listening, there is nothing that he should have been impeached about. Do you see the rest of the world seeing that as weakness on us, or what do you think?
I think the rest of the world is divided into the camps just like we are. Excuse me. I have a girl that's one of my kids is going to school in Ireland these days, and we've been over and talked to her and met with her, and she complains all the time that all of her classmates from the U.S. and obviously from Ireland are biased left wing, like there's no tomorrow. And if you look at the foreign press, the foreign press is anti-Trump as well. So I mean, you've got a lot of people who don't really understand the U.S., but what they get from their own media tends to bias them in a direction that is anti-Trump, is flat out. So, you know, but there are reasonable people that you can talk to who understand things, who've been close observers of the U.S. for years and years, and those rational people are amazed at what Trump has been able to do with all the resistance that he has been facing, all the headwinds that he's been facing from the very beginning. So I'd say the European viewpoint is a mixed bag. Who knows what people think in Asia. Got a few contacts, some expats that live over in Thailand and other places, and they're surprised that the Democrat Party is going after Trump, who is being so successful, because he's been able to accomplish things from their point of view. They're about accomplishment. They're about personal achievement. They like to pursue things, and they like to support people who are successful. And they see Trump as being successful across the board, and they scratch their heads and wonder what are these Democrats doing?
Right.
So it's kind of a mixed bag, I guess, is the right way to put it.
It doesn't make any sense. You know, it was funny. We were over in Ireland last May. My wife and I and some friends, we went over to Ireland and to Scotland. And there was an interesting point of view looking at America. They really, we had a family party, and all these people that live in Ireland came to the party. It was wonderful to talk to them. And of course, eventually it turns to politics. And they were all saying, well, this Trump guy, you know, he hates so many different Petes. He hates your minorities, right? Oh, he hates your gay communities. And, he's so negative to them. And we're saying, wait a minute, where is there any evidence of that? I mean, I see it exactly the opposite way, that he's been a great supporter of our minority communities, that he's been a supporter of all of our communities here in America. And it's coming from their media, which I think, you know, labeling it the fake news has been probably the bell ringer. We've all kind of known for years that the news was fake, but it was never so blatant as it is now. And another part of our trip took us to Scotland, where we're in this local little bar having some cocktails. And there was a bunch of younger people in there, and they knew we were American. And somebody said to us, listen, whatever you do, don't bring up politics, because especially if they know you like Trump, they'll be all over you. And we ended up having a conversation with another couple who were probably in our age, in their 50s. And, you know, we're just talking about, you know, America and Brexit. We're going back and forth. And the woman leans into my wife and I and says, well, do you guys like Trump? And this was like one of those moments, you know, we're going to cause a bar fight here. What are we going to do? But I said, you know what? I stand up for my rights. And I said, well, actually, we do like Trump. We think he's really making a big difference. He's doing things to make our country better. And the woman and her husband look at each other, and she goes, we like him too. We just can't say it out loud. And I said, you know what?
Oh, my gosh.
That was amazing, because I think as we're looking at these polls, you know, and he's always got these lower polls, and like you said, Hillary was supposed to win in a landslide and she didn't.
Yeah.
If you go out and you say you're pro-Trump, people will come and throw stones through your front window. They will bust up your car. They will do all kinds of things. It's dangerous.
I'm not as completely happy with the notion that we're gonna see a giant red wave here in November as perhaps others are on this call. I mean, mm-hmm. if you look at what the media has been doing, now obviously they've been disproven in some people's eyes, but by and large, there's a large segment of the U.S. that doesn't pay attention to politics at all. Mm-hmm. They live their lives. They, you know, they couldn't even identify Adam Schiff, those Jeopardy.
That was hysterical.
Wasn't that something? Hey, here's a guy who's been on TV hundreds of times. And these people that come to Jeopardy are fairly up on issues and trivia and so forth, and they couldn't pick him out of a lineup, basically. I mean, that's just an example of what we're dealing with here in this country. The Newsbusters came out with an article that said between September and the end of the year, the media were 93% anti-Trump. So you've got that, you have that constant bang, 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 everything negative Trump. And the people that don't pay attention have swallowed that hook, line, and sinker, and they've maintained that attitude for 3 years. And those people aren't going to change. That's the Democrat base. So you start off right there. There are people that are that will never vote Trump, no matter how good he is, no matter what he does. And then you've got people inside the Republican Party who are anti-Trump also, so-called right. Never Trump conservatives.
There's much more to unpack here. So, ladies and gentlemen, hang on. Come back with a Viewpoint this Sunday as we keep the conversation rolling.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Viewpoint this Sunday. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, your fill-in host. I'm here for the great Malcolm Out Loud. We're going to continue our conversation as we move forward. There's a lot of things with foreign policy. There's a lot of things going on with how the government's being run. We talked in the last couple segments about the impeachment and how the Republicans and the Democrats are going at each other, how that's affecting our country, how it affects us with the rest of the world. But right now, I'm going to have Ilana Freeman with me. We're going to have Stu Swerk, and the great Jim McKay has jumped back on with us. So the question that I have here, except for the last 20 years, foreign policy was always a bipartisan type of an event. Our country really moved in the same direction. You elected a president who, the president is foreign policy. That's why we elect the president. He comes up with or her foreign policy, whatever the president decides. And then everyone kind of understands that's the idea. They jump in behind and away we go. We've seemed to have some differences going on right now. We're looking at the Congress trying to jump in and take their piece of the pie. We're watching politicians everywhere think they should be running it. We're seeing the deep state trying to run policy. Diplomats who disagree with the president do their own thing. This has really become quite a mess. So I'm going to turn first to Ilana. I'm going to say, Ilana, you've been a viewer of foreign policy for many years. Where do you see American foreign policy right now? What problems do you see with it?
Well, I think the matter of foreign policy is very corrupted right now because the president is doing his job and he is setting foreign policy, and that's why he's able to do these magnificent trade deals and deal with foreign leaders. The problem that we have, however, is that the Democrats are attacking his right to run foreign policy. And that is a major problem for our country because we have to have order in the way this is done. And what foreign countries see now is that the president is doing his thing and that he's running into tremendous interference, you know, really huge headwinds from the Democrat Party, and that's something I don't know how we're going to overcome that except by defeating the Democrats in the next election.
I think you're right, and it creates a confusion, a chaos where if I'm the leader of another country, a powerful country, and the United States has always been a stable superpower. Do we really look stable right now? When I'm looking at this, Stu, and I'm asking you. You know, you have a pretty good picture of the world. Do we look stable with all this infighting, this back and forth over who's running policy, who has something to say, people attacking the president? Do we look stable to the rest of the world?
Well, I would say that a lot of people around the world would view us as a stable democracy, but that depending on which party is in power, in the presidency in particular, you get a seesaw of opinions. Now, there used to be consensus about certain important things, like the Cold War. There was a Cold War consensus of containment and mutually assured destruction, no first use of nuclear weapons and that kind of thing. But on issues that are away from those major topics in the world of foreign policy, there have been a lot of differences between the parties in particular. And there's been a U.S. foreign policy establishment that's grown up over the years. It's kind of like been almost like a cottage industry that pursues certain policies, if you want to call it that, regardless of who is sitting in the Oval Office. So, I mean, I think the rest of the world looks at us, depending on who sits in the Oval Office, that we understand that policies are going to change and that we're not going to be necessarily consistent across the board from administration to administration. But they also look at the economic part that sits, that is manifested by the United States too. And they realize that a stable country is the only environment that would support developing the economy like ours. So they understand how our politics works to some extent, at least as far as Republicans versus Democrats, left versus right and so forth.
Yep. I do see the rest of the world, you know, could see this chaos going on. You know, presidents out somewhere used to be, you know, they didn't talk about a president negatively when he was in a foreign country, when he was away somewhere. Our Democrat friends don't seem to really adhere to that. They don't mind attacking the president when he's at a meeting with other foreign leaders. They don't mind saying things that's negative. You know, Jim McKay, when we see our president, as we've said many times here to even this morning, you know, he's fighting all of these outside forces, even forces from within the United States. Does that make it more difficult for him to run foreign policy, to convince these other countries to do what he's saying, or does that diminish him somehow?
I think it really interferes with his ability to conduct foreign policy. The difference today from what it was 20 or 30 years ago was a lot of our foreign policy has been based on financial aid. And when we provided this aid to countries, it was very quiet. You didn't know that you were, quote unquote, withholding $391 million from Ukraine or anybody like that. But what has happened is foreign policy is driven now by media and opinion. Should we be in this conflict? Should we be out of this one? Should we be paying this guy money, this other guy not? And everything's out there for discussion. And the media is driving the discussion. And it's all political. It is not for the betterment of the people around the globe. So it's a very hard thing for a president to do, who is, you know, charged by the Constitution with conducting foreign policy. The only constitutional involvement by any part of Congress is the House has the ability to control a budget, which would support the military, and the Senate has the right to of approval and confirmation of treaties. That's it. Otherwise, it's all in the hands of the president.
Right. Now, interesting. When we see the Congress, we see Nancy Pelosi jumping up and down and screaming that the president's taking. I have said all along that I think one of the problems that our Democrat friends have with President Trump is anytime he exercises the power of the presidency, it drives them crazy. And they don't think it's appropriate because they don't see him as a legitimate president. They think they should be running things. So Ilana, when we see President Trump see a danger in the world and he decides this is a moment to do the right thing and take this guy out, this terrorist, and then Nancy Pelosi screaming about, well, he didn't come to us and ask us permission. Is any legitimacy to what she's saying there?
None. Absolutely none. In the first place, this was a split-second decision. This is something they had an opportunity, and they literally had seconds to make a decision, minutes maybe. But they certainly did not have time to go to Congress and argue with Congress about whether this was or was not a viable operation and whether it should be done. They had to make the decision. They made it. It was the right one because this man was a monster who needed to be taken out, and he was, in fact, a threat to our people and this to Americans everywhere, not just in Iraq and Iran. And so this was something that had to be done, and talking to Congress would have been illegitimate in this circumstance. And by the way, Obama took out, remember, Osama bin Laden, and he bombed Libya without any authorization from Congress. And he in fact did hundreds of drone strikes that had no authorization from Congress either. So, you know, this is all doublespeak. It's a total unbelievable that they could even use this as an argument, because it's something that they did. And this is the projection that they're doing all the time. They're accusing the president of crimes that they have committed. So right. I think her argument is specious. Her accusation against the president makes no sense at all. And in fact, she supported all of these actions under Obama. So, I think it's time for her to shut up and go home, frankly.
Well, wouldn't that be wonderful? You know, she does have a place. She's the Speaker of the House. She's the representative of the people. And I get that. Very important position, part of the, you know, co-equal branches of government and all that. But it seems to me, when I see Nancy Pelosi acting in that position, I do not see her acting for the good of the entire country. She's acting in a very limited way for a certain constituency. She's not looking out for everybody. She's not taking into consideration anyone else's point of view other than her own group, her own party, and the radicals within that. So, Stu, when you see that across time, and you see this use of Pelosi trying to control foreign policy, what is her position in there? What does she have as a role in foreign policy at all as Speaker?
She has the power of the purse, and that's it. Sorry, that's the way it goes. And you know, they hide behind this War Powers Resolution, this War Powers Act that was passed in 1973. By the way, very similar circumstances, of course. You know, we were at the tail end of the Vietnam War, and the Democrats were concerned about a Republican president who campaigned on getting out of Vietnam, by the way, very much like President Trump campaigned on getting out of the Middle East, too. Now, both presidents in parallel took actions that on instance raised the commitment of military forces, if you want to call it that, in both of those circumstances. And yet Pelosi is trying to claim that through that War Powers Resolution or War Powers Act that she has the ability to curtail anything that President Trump wants to do to protect U.S. personnel overseas, which is his responsibility as commander in chief. It's absurd, just like Alana said, it's absurd to listen to the woman talk because she doesn't know what her constitutional responsibilities are.
Right. And doesn't that go back to the failure of our media? You know, our media was built in. They're in the Constitution. They are supposed to be there to inform people of what's going on, you know, hold truth to power and all that kind of nonsense that they talk about. But how come we're not seeing story after story about, well, here is what the Constitution actually says? Instead, they kind of back her up, don't they, Jim McKay, when you see the press's role in all of this? Why aren't we seeing stories where they explain to the people who really, people don't learn anymore about their Constitution?
I think that goes back to where the media is aligned with. They are, some people say, an extension of the propaganda arm of the Democratic National Committee, which I would tend to agree to, when 93% of all of the articles, whether print, air, or cable news, are all against the president. The fact that Pelosi, Schumer, Schiff, all these people overstepped the bounds of the Constitution on this, they're aware of where the limits are. I mean, it's very, very clear. The Constitution is not a huge document in terms of the number of words. But what has happened over the last 70 years is the liberal influences, the progressive influences, the influences that's put upon the court system has really taken the Constitution and made it through lower decisions in case law, really changed a lot of the meanings of in the way they bend the words of the Constitution. And this is one of them, this War Power Act of 73. Every president since that time has said it's unconstitutional. Nixon said it, then Ford, then Jimmy Carter, and then, you know, Reagan, Clinton, like, you know, go on and on. And every president has basically ignored it. And sure, they face criticism, but there's no there in this document. And again, Pelosi made this a resolution, a non-binding resolution, and because she didn't want it to go to the president and have it vetoed. That's her excuse for that.
Right. And, you know, I say when you see the War Powers Act, the whole idea was, you know, we were coming out of a bad time in our country. People were really up in arms, really for the first time, over a military action, that we weren't all behind it. And I could see where there was probably this feeling that, hey, you know, the president can act immediately to do the right thing. But as time goes by, the people really should have a say before we're sending our young men and women off to die because one person thinks we think we should do that. But that doesn't really jive with the Constitution, does it, Stu?
No, it does not. Again, the idea behind both of those, the War Powers Act and now this resolution, was to curtail the power of the presidency in terms of being able to commit forces to provide security to personnel, to extract military from two different regions of the world, to get the best negotiating position via commitment, situational commitment of military to enhance the current national security disposition in those two theaters. I mean, that's basically what the president has to do as a matter of him executing his job. And for Pelosi and the Democrats to impinge upon that and to essentially try to tie a president's hands, as Jim said, every president subsequent to the passing of that War Powers Act in 73 has basically ignored it for all practical purposes,
right,
including Democrat presidents.
Sure. So, I think if you're the person, wherever you're from, you're the president of the United States. I think when you walk into that office, to that Oval Office, and you realize, hey, the buck stops with you. The safety of every American is yours, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. And you see things you think you need to take care of. You need to take action to protect us. And if you have an opposing Congress who wants to jump in, now, they've never done it to the extent that Nancy Pelosi and her cadre have done, where they're public about this. I'm sure they went behind the scenes and talked about it, but these people come right out and the media back them up as though the president has no right to do this. So,
if that drone attack wasn't righteous, then nothing was. Soleimani was responsible for upwards of 600 American deaths, is what the calculation is from Military Times and some other publications. That's basically one out of every six Americans who died in Iraq is directly responsible. He's directly responsible for those actions. The guy was on the terrorist watch list. He was on a UN no-fly list. And here the guy pops up in Baghdad, planning to take out or conduct attacks on four U.S. embassies. The Iranian-backed militia had already attacked, you know, Iraqi Hezbollah had already attacked the U.S. embassy in Baghdad. I mean, good grief. If that wasn't a righteous drone attack, then nothing was.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's how I saw it. That's how lots of clear thinking people see it. You know, as we come to the end of this segment and the end of Viewpoint this Sunday, I want to thank all of you for being on here. And for everybody out there, remember, it's time to get involved and it's time to get loud.